Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It. I'm Matt Katz, filling in for Allison Stewart. In 1976 and 1977, a serial killer was terrorizing New York City. He called himself the Son of Sam, and he was shooting people in what seemed to be indiscriminate acts of violence. He most often targeted women or couples sitting in cars on lovers' lanes. In a little over a year, he killed 6 people and wounded 7 others. The NYPD arrested a man named David Berkowitz, a Yonkers postal worker. He confessed to the crimes and pleaded guilty. Case closed. But not really. One man, a frustrated journalist named Maury Terry, became convinced that Berkowitz had not acted alone, and he was determined to prove it. A new Netflix series delves into Maury Terry's theories and the toll investigating this case took on his own life. It's called The Sons of Sam, A Descent into Darkness, and it presents a pretty compelling case that maybe Maury was onto something. Joshua Zeman directed and executive produced the series, which is available to stream as of this morning on Netflix. You may know him for his acclaimed documentary, Cropsey, and he joins me now on All of It. Hi, Josh.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so excited to dive into this. Finished the series this morning, and it blew my mind. So let's start with how this film being as much about Son of Sam as it is about this journalist, Maury Terry. He's the reporter who investigated the accused serial killer's crimes for decades. How did you and Maury Terry get connected, and what were your impressions of him?
I first heard about Maury. I was making a documentary about some missing kids in my hometown of Staten Island called Cropsey. Mm. And while we were investigating that case, there were all these cops and basically who kept rumors basically around the island that somehow these missing kids were connected to the Son of Sam case, and that they were connected because the Son of Sam didn't act alone, and that there was this cult theoretically behind both the Son of Sam that was connected to these missing kids. I didn't believe it. I thought it was all satanic panic. And that's when a couple cops sat me down and said, no, let me tell you a story. There really is this connection, and we actually believe, some of us actually believe, that this could be true. And they told me to read this book called The Ultimate Evil, written by Maury Terry. And, you know, it scared the hell out of me, and I don't scare easy. And yeah. So I was like, oh, I have to meet this individual. And that's how I came to meet Maury Terry. He was a super fascinating guy for somebody who's a true crime journalist like myself. He knew all this information. Yet at the same time, I could tell just from that first meeting that he had gone so far down the rabbit hole of this case. So he was like this kind of mentor and unreliable narrator all woven into one.
And then he gave you all of his research, his documents, boxes of files?
Yeah, well, you know, he kept pestering me to do a documentary. I had done Cropsey, and, you know, I think he saw me as some kind of like last chance to finally get the story out there and to prove what he had believed for all this time. And I didn't want to do it. I thought, oh, this is going to be a mistake. He's too invested in the truth or too invested in his own version of the truth, if you will. And he ended up passing away. And suddenly a couple months later, his family said, oh, Maury wanted you to have his files. And suddenly I found myself in possession of all these boxes of all his files and all these interviews that he had done with Berkowitz and these letters that the two had exchanged, hundreds and hundreds of letters over the years.
And then you decided to then make this series and use really Maury's words as a narration throughout. And the words are read by Paul Giamatti. Why did you choose to have this film narrated by Maury and then get Paul Giamatti to do the voiceover?
I had worked with Paul on a movie previously, and Paul just, he loves things that are strange and weird, and he's totally into true crime. And, you know, Paul is a chameleon, And he just really embodied Maury. You know, we wanted to get Maury's writings in there. Because when you read this book, you're not just kind of like reading an investigation. You're also in, you're feeling this author go down this rabbit hole. And so we wanted to try and make sure that the audience felt that as well.
Right, right. So let's go back to the beginning of the case. Many of our listeners will remember the New York City of 1976 when these shootings began. I'm gonna play a clip. Clip A about fear in the city at the time. Can we hear that real quick? This is a clip from the new Netflix documentary on Sons of Sam.
Fear has spread in this city. Streets and residential areas are deserted late at night.
Lovers' lanes were emptied. Spots where young people congregated, the police department was given an order to get them basically out of harm's way.
We used to stay in front of my house and park and yell and kiss goodnight, but we can't do that no more.
The vulnerability was not just in a lover's lane, it was walking down the street. You were vulnerable any place. That was the fear. Fear became pervasive.
Fear that the gunman is waiting to strike again has unnerved young women throughout Queens and the Bronx.
By day, young women can be seen wearing their hair in kerchiefs or pinned up.
I'm afraid. I'm afraid to go out in the car. I'm afraid to do anything. Never know where he's going to be.
I thought of maybe dyeing it a little redder or something, really. Be honest, you know, because just having short brown hair.
Do you have many customers who come in, women who want to get their hair shortened?
Yes, I do. They get their hair cut short, even though it's not so becoming on them.
The scope of what he was doing, just nonchalantly walking up to cars and blowing people's brains out. There was no rhyme or reason to it. Were we looking for one person? Were we looking for two? We didn't know. It's a big city. And to find one little speck in a big city is difficult.
That's a clip from The Sons of Sam, A Descent into Darkness. Josh, give us a little sense of what's going on here. This is that's a compilation of various news clippings from the time a serial killer is now starting to terrorize New York City. There's already fear of a crime wave going on in the city to begin with. Give us a sense of what's happening in New York at the time.
First of all, thank you for pulling that clip because it's one of my favorites. It's because it was such an amazing time in New York City. And I that is the whole idea. And that was my goal, is to try and let people know how crazy it was. I mean, you had a city that at the time was on the edge of bankruptcy. You had crime rate that was skyrocketing out of control. You had social services, garbage was piling up in the streets. You had the tenements were burning up in the Bronx, over 12,000 cases of arson, 4 murders a night. You had a blackout in which millions and millions of dollars of damage had been done. And on top of it, you've got this serial killer. Basically, for 13 months, he's bringing New York City to its knees. You know, he's shooting couples in lovers' lanes. And it was so amazing. And that is what I really want to try and capture. And that's what makes the story kind of so special.
Right, right. There's clips that you have in there of news footage of people, as we just heard, of women saying that they were changing their hair. And that's because there was a sense that the Son of Sam, whoever this person might be, was targeting women who had a certain haircut, right?
Yeah. And that footage, by the way, you know, as somebody who kind of grew up in New York City watching Live at 5, and, you know, I'm a child of New York City news.
Me too.
So for me to kind of go back and revisit that was just amazing. And we had gone in, but that's actually a lot of never before seen footage, because a lot of the local radio stations, you know, those are still on film reels and they don't even have enough money anymore to transfer that stuff over to video. So we really got lucky in terms of being able to kind of pull that footage and see some amazing man on the street interviews.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's some newscasters I remember from my childhood, and there's a whole ton of Geraldo in your film as well. But it really does. It's a period of time, I think, that people of a certain age and who were in New York will very much viscerally remember. I mean, there was a pervasive sense of fear. I mean, people like changed how they lived their lives for a period of time, right?
It's true, and you know, I don't want to make analogies, you know, for the sake of doing it. But, you know, when I talk to people about it, I say, well, how can you describe it to the generation? And they all turn around. They all say the same thing. They say, it's just like the pandemic, just like it, you know. And I was like, oh, that's very interesting that you kind of say that. And because people were not going out, they weren't going to bars, they weren't going to restaurants, they weren't going to discos, they were afraid to leave their house.
So these shootings are happening, and at first they're random. They seem random. What patterns begin to emerge?
Good question. Well, I think one of the strongest pieces of evidence and one of the patterns that I think kind of got the antennas up for most of the people was the eyewitness sketches. And, you know, usually we don't really think that eyewitness sketches are that good. But in this case, we had some really good identification, and there were like five or six sketches of very, very different people, from eyewitnesses who like literally turned and saw the person kind of approach them and shoot them. They survived, and they would sketch the same person. Like two women who were standing on a porch, they both sketched almost the exact same face, looked nothing like David Berkowitz. So it was sketches. It was letters with kind of like weird clues in them. It was aliases that were used. It was vehicles. There was a fair preponderance of evidence to suggest, maybe something is going on more than what we might think.
You mentioned letters. He was sending police and journalists, Jimmy Breslin, these disturbing letters. Was there ever a handwriting analysis done? I don't think this came up in the series, but I was curious about it in watching. I don't know if this was maybe too early for that. Were these letters examined in any way?
The Maury Terry actually had Charles Hamilton, a very famous handwriting expert, look at them later on. And the guy's like, oh, there's no way that these two letters, the first letter that was dropped at the scene and the second letter that was sent to Breslin, he said, though, there's no way that these letters could have been done by the same person. And when you kind of analyze the letters, you sit there and you're like, oh, my God, these were they sound very different. They're kind of like scrawled differently. And it was just so interesting to kind of look at it so many years later.
But so you're starting to hint at the fact that there's now questions that it might not be one person. But how did the NYPD come to suspect that it was David Berkowitz, this postal worker from Yonkers, who was?
Well, that's a good question. That's a great question. You know, we have this, you know, how basically stories get codified and mythologized. And we have this mythology that kind of runs through both basically a lot of true crime, which is David Berkowitz was caught by the simplest of detective skills through a parking ticket. And actually, we end up finding out that it's not really that. Berkowitz had been on people's radars beforehand. They basically find a parking ticket. A detective is actually calling, not because they think Berkowitz had anything to do with it, because they thought he was a witness. And when he calls, this woman named Wheat Carr jumps on the phone and says, oh, David Berkowitz, I know David Berkowitz. He's in my neighborhood. He's been terrorizing my family. And so they go up, this being the NYPD, and then arrest him and then parade him through, you know, one police plaza.
You know what? I'm going to take a break, and then I want to hear a clip from the NYPD at the time. So we're going to take a break first. I'm speaking with director Josh Zeman about the Netflix documentary series, The Sons of Sam, Descent into Darkness. We'll continue our conversation after we take a quick break. Stay with us. You're listening to All of It. I'm Matt Katz, filling in for Allison Stewart, and we're talking about the new Netflix docuseries, The Sons of Sam, A Descent into Darkness. Joshua Zeman, who directed and executive produced the series, is joining us. And Josh, I want to play a clip from after Berkowitz is arrested, because he seems to confess right away. Here are officers involved in the arrest reflecting on that night.
About 8:45, a subject came out of the building. Now, I looked out and I said to the two officers, I think this might be him. He's coming towards a car. He did stop. He opened the door. I said, this is him. I jumped out of the car. I ran down the street, pulled my revolver, pointed at him. We said, freeze, police, turn the key off, you know, get out of the car, put your hands on the roof.
And he was asked, are you David Berkowitz? And his answer was, no, I'm the son of Sam, and you got me.
Josh, what does Berkowitz tell cops about the killings, about his motivation?
Well, he basically is paraded through this, you know, press scrum. He's smiling, which is kind of weird. Almost all the news reports note that he's smiling. They get him upstairs and he says, well, the reason I committed all these crimes is because a demon dog, my neighbor's dog, had commanded me to kill and to, you know, drive through the streets and shoot couples. And basically, you know, in one night, the police interview him for a half an hour. Then the DAs from all the other boroughs come in and, you know, he gives a full confession. He gives good evidence, you know, to prove that he was there. And then, you know, after one night, that's it. You know, David Berkowitz is caught and the rest is history.
Then you have this guy, Maury Terry. He was a reporter in newspapers. His career sort of petered out. He was working at IBM doing writing for them. And he's following this case. And he's the kind of guy who gets hooked on a thing and can't let it go. What about the arrest of Berkowitz doesn't sit right with Maury Terry?
Well, I think Maury and a lot of people were looking and really kind of like playing armchair detective. And they were looking at the newspapers, and they were looking at the articles, and they were looking at the sketches, and they were looking at, like, for example, reports of looking for a VW car that everybody was looking for. So, you know, and Maury's from Yonkers. And David Berkowitz is arrested in Yonkers. And so he just really starts to go in and look at it. And one of the early things he notices that this guy, Sam Carr, the owner of the dog that David Berkowitz said had commanded him to kill, he sees a picture of John Carr. And John Carr looks incredibly like one of the sketches. And so it's little things like that, big things, that basically kind of send him on this journey, if you will, a 40-year journey to basically get to the truth behind the Son of Sam case.
And then there's a second brother that he that also becomes relevant, as we learn in the series. Did you reach out to members of this family that lived near Berkowitz and then became
the Carr family?
The Carr family, yeah.
Well, so before we go there, one other very interesting thing is that this is one of the largest manhunts in New York City history, right? The NYPD spends tens of thousands of man hours chasing down every lead. And when Berkowitz is arrested, it says, oh, you know, I'm the son of Sam, you know, it's a dog. They do not interview the actual sons of Sam, who are Berkowitz's neighbors, the guys who kind of had the same name. They do not spend 1 hour interviewing these two brothers who are happen to be
sons of Sam Carr. Yes, right.
Yeah, they don't interview him at all. And it's like, how do you not do that in a post-arrest investigation? So basically, did I ever speak with the Carrs? No, the brothers, because they're dead. One of them died literally months after, in Minot, North Dakota. In fact, the day before he died, he told a mental health professional that we interviewed in the series that he has information that the NYPD would probably love to know, and that he was fearing for his life. And literally the next day he dies in an apparent suicide attempt with a gunshot to the face.
And the other brother dies as well, and potentially the other questionable circumstances too. Yeah.
Yeah, a mysterious car crash on the West Side Highway.
And the NYPD, this evidence keeps popping up that maybe Berkowitz's story that he's the lone son of Sam, maybe that's not all that credible, but the NYPD ignores, it seems, this evidence over and over and over again. Why? Why would the NYPD be motivated to decide that this was only the work of one man?
Good question. You know, and I think you've covered politics in New York City and New Jersey. I mean, you know, I think they wanted it to be over with. You know, as I said before, New York City had been through a terrible time. You know, it wasn't just an economic crisis. It was a moral crisis. And the city was really on its last legs. And finally, you know, suddenly, after 13 months, this loner, David Berkowitz, a 24-year-old postal worker from Yonkers, you know, is arrested and he's paraded through and he's smiling for the cameras. And he gets upstairs and he says, a demon dog made me do it. Like, he was almost a savior. He was almost a scapegoat for New York City so that New York City could almost get back on its legs again.
Yeah.
And so I think it was important for Mayor Abe Beame, you know, for this to end. You know, there were a lot of, I think it was one of the largest promotional ceremonies in the NYPD happened right after this case. So, you know, it's politics. It's big city politics, I think.
Yeah, yeah. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Joshua Zeman about his new Netflix series, The Sons of Sam, A Descent into Darkness, about the case of the Son of Sam case that anybody who's been in New York City is familiar with, or at least thinks they're familiar with it. I am interested, Josh, in how Maury becomes convinced that Berkowitz has these accomplices, as we've been talking about. And then he gets into this idea that there's a satanic aspect to the killing, and that is somehow linked to his theory that there are accomplices. Does some of the evidence that he presented about the satanic aspects to this seem compelling to you, and some of the evidence seem far-fetched?
I would say that's a fairly good way of putting it. You know, the first half of Maury's investigation, which is, you know, looking at these kind of threads and realizing that the police maybe didn't fully examine the case post-arrest investigation in the way that they should have, and there were others out there, all that seems very good. But I think when Maury started to come out with these allegations, the NYPD called him a crackpot. And I think sometimes, you know, when you get called a crackpot, you double down. And so I think Maury doubled down pretty hard. That's not to say that there weren't these kind of interesting satanic things going on, but I think at the end of the day, they were using the satanic stuff as a smokescreen, you know, a validation for why people like to do bad things, you know. And if you can have a moral, you know, part of it, it's that much better. But then I think Maury spiraled down the rabbit hole and got caught up in a kind of satanic panic world.
Yeah, yeah, and in fact,
and just started to see, yeah,
started to see this satanic aspect everywhere when it under all different angles of this.
Yeah, I mean that's, you know, I think, you know, he spiraled down the rabbit hole, and 40 years later he never got back out, you know, and that's the kind of cautionary tale that I think is important for today about, you know, going down a rabbit hole. You know, right. We go down rabbit holes for 4 hours. Maury Terry went down a rabbit hole for 40 years.
I think the title of the fourth episode is called Rabbit Hole. How did you make sure that you didn't fall down this thing? I mean, you're working on this. You lived and breathed it, I'm sure, for several years. How do you make sure that you're not falling down the same rabbit hole that Maury did?
Well, in by making this story. You know, in some ways, I was, in some ways, you know, by making it about not just the investigation, but Maury himself, I was making my own cautionary tale, you know, and I was using him as my moral compass. Like, you know, do this, don't do that, you know, and be careful, you know, because you do. And in some ways we celebrate that in our kind of true crime obsession, you know, we binge for a whole weekend, but you know, sometimes it's not really the best thing in the world. Mm.
You know, I think you can hold two things at the same time. You can believe that maybe Maury went down a rabbit hole, but also believe that the authorities knowingly ignored very important and murderous evidence here, right? I mean, you can carry both of those things with you at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how I do it. You know, that's exactly how I see it. I say, okay, there was a botched investigation here. There's a lot of evidence to suggest some other people were involved. And at the same time, you're like, oh, this guy, tragically, he went down this rabbit hole. And in some ways that tainted his earlier investigation. If he had just stopped, you know, maybe the history books would be different, you know. Also, the stories about press mythologies. I mean, you know, you had a tabloid war going on in New York City at the time, you know, this guy who says, you know, a dog made me do it. I mean, it's tabloid fodder. And yes, the press ran with that story and they codified that story. And, you know, so Maury's sitting there trying to battle against, you know, the legend.
And tabloids were king at the time. This is like pre-CNN. There's no cable news. You're just getting your news from the local TV and then whatever the Daily News and the Post are telling you, right? I mean, this was their prime. Jimmy Breslin was all over this. That's a piece of the story is telling the New York City and the media environment at this split moment in time, right?
I mean, when you look at it and you look at it through that lens, you're like, oh my God, the Son of Sam was the case. It really mm-hmm. did set the stage for how tabloid journalism worked. You know, this is where Murdoch came in. He had just bought the Post and he realized that more than sex, fear sells. And you can kind of chart this rise from the Son of Sam. And then just years later, just two or three years after the case, suddenly a current affair starts. Suddenly, you know, Inside Edition starts. And you could just kind of see how the style of tabloid journalism takes off from this case. And to me, that as a true crime journalist is very interesting.
Before I let you go, I got to ask, did you try to speak to David Berkowitz himself?
I did. I did because I wanted to ask him about Maury Terry.
And?
You know, he had a very complicated relationship with Maury Terry. I think he considers Maury Terry his friend. But, you know, I was interested not in speaking to Berkowitz about his crimes, but about his relationship with Maury.
Did you try to get him to be part of the film?
No. I think the story is much better kind of seeing it from Maury Terry's eyes. You know, one of the best parts of the whole film is when Berkowitz tells Maury, no matter how much evidence you have, the public will never, ever believe you.
Right.
And to me, that's so prescient. You know, here you have the theoretically murderous serial killer telling the journalist, no one is ever going to believe you because the mythology is so strong.
Josh, this has been so fascinating. I've been speaking with director Joshua Zeman about the Netflix documentary series, The Sons of Sam, Descent into Darkness. Josh, congratulations on this film, and thank you so much for joining us on All of It.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.